קצה משודרת מבית האוזן השלישית. בית למוזיקה ולתרבות קצה. אתם עכשיו.
אתם עכשיו.
על הקצה. הקצה. הסאונד האלטרנטיבי של ישראל.
כבר 10 שנים.
היי, אלן, אתם על הקצה, kzradio.net. תוכנית מיוחדת, בשעה מיוחדת, ביום מיוחד, עם אורח מיוחד. קודם כל אורי זה רביב. אורי, אתה בסדר?
כן, פה שיחקתי עם הרגע, עם הווליום ועם המיקרופון.
אורייט.
אלן.
אלן, ו... אורח מיוחד שיש לנו היום, שון ג'ונסטון, הלו.
היי,
שון. How are you? שון, I'll just explain it on Hebrew for our audience. הוא חצי הצמד, Love from Outer Space, ביחד עם אנדרו אדרול, זכר צדיק לברכה, וגם פועל לבדו בפרויקט The Hardway Bros. ושון מגיע אלינו במיוחד מאנגליה לתקלוט ראשון בישראל, וממש בעוד כמה שעות, כמה קומות מתחתנו, ממש פה, באוזן המחודש, איפה שהיה המועדון הבוטלג בעבר. שון יתקלט ביחד עם נדב רביד ולוטנט דן, בזמן שבחדר הנוסף יתקלטו קוואמי, נוער גוב ושלום אורי,
שלום,
שנמצא איתנו גם כאן באולפן, ואני כאן בתור מעריץ ואוהב
והכל.
So, שון... How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, you had your first gig in Israel yesterday in Haifa, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Cabaret. How was it?
Yeah, it's really good fun. It's really good fun, great venue.
What was the name of the place where you were in?
Cabaret.
Cabaret, okay. Is it, it's an Arab, Arabic audience, mostly?
Well, mixed. I think it seemed to me to be a mixed audience, but obviously I... wasn't inspecting people to find out their religious denomination.
No, of course. I think the downtown Haifa is a bit mixed place. And
mixed city.
Music lovers.
Yeah, absolutely. But really great venue, great sound system, nice bunch of people and a great night. A lot of fun. Enjoyed myself.
Cool.
Hopefully we'll see some of your last night audience tonight.
Yeah. Hopefully. We just want to begin with the track that you brought most of the tracks so can you tell us a bit what we're hearing right now and just
okay,
move forward
so
from here.
Okay, so the first track that I brought along to listen to is it's called Masimba Bele by the Unknown Cases, and it was made in Germany in the 80s, but sounds like it could have been made in this part of the world. But I first heard this on John Peel's famous radio show, and it was a pretty hard to find record, but I managed to find a copy of it, and it, I think we can safely say, has informed my musical taste and certainly informed the musical kind of shape of A Love From Outer Space.
All right, so we'll talk about Love From Outer Space in a bit, and just after this. אז אנחנו כאן עד שש, תהנו.
Bye.
Masimba Bella, The Unknown Cases.
It's really great.
Yeah, it's very good. It doesn't sound like an old track at all. It sounds totally fresh. So you told us that this track is kind of symbolizes the...
Yeah, it's kind of the musical blueprint for the project that Andrew Wetherill and I did called A Love From Outer Space, where we made a conscious decision to lower the BPMs and not exceed 122 beats per minute that club night. And yeah, it was an experiment, and we started this around about 2010, and at the time in the club scene in London, that whole minimal tech kind of thing was going on, and everything was kind of very samey, and we were kind of harking back to the days when we first started DJing, when you could pretty much play anything that you wanted, and that's what we did.
What year are we talking about?
2010.
Okay.
But you felt at that time that...
Uri, don't answer instead of our guest.
No, he just says
it's a question.
Yeah.
You were feeling that the music scene is getting a little bit too homogenic?
Yeah, I mean, there's... In London, we'd had the minimal thing, and there was kind of a tech house thing creeping in, and this is around about the time when Beatport started to become a thing, and things were just getting very homogenized, and kind of... It seemed to me and Andrew that it was all getting a little bit one-dimensional, and we needed to inject a little bit of variety into proceedings. So you're
talking about a technical aspect of the BPM of the music.
No,
but
I think that, you know,
but it's not about what.
You could go to pretty much any nightclub in London, and it'd be 125 BPM, and it all seemed pretty interchangeable, and it was. You know, there was obviously DJs had a different sound, but it was all pretty, as we say in England, much of a muchness. And we just felt that it was time maybe to do something a little bit different.
How did you and Andrew got meet?
Oh, long story.
Long story, okay.
Very long story.
We're here for stories.
We have time.
We love stories.
So I met Andrew in probably about 1990. At the time, I was working as a booking agent, booking tours for bands, and I was working with a band from Manchester called In Spiral Carpets.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Wow.
Their press was handled by a company called Capersville, which was owned by Jeff Barrett, who went on to found Heavenly Records.
Yeah.
And I had gone to Jeff's office to discuss some In Spiral Carpets business, and Jeff had mentioned that he was going to go meet Andrew Wetherill for lunch, and did I wish to accompany him? And
okay.
Of course, I was at the time, you know, Andrew's probably Andrew's number one fan, so I was very keen to go and have lunch with him. So
Was it after Screamadelica? No,
before Screamadelica. Yeah.
I think everybody's going to play tonight are Andrew's fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeff Barrett introduced me to him, and then I, you know, going into the 90s, I started to make music myself, and Andrew released some of the techno that I made on the Sabres of Paradise label as Flash Faction, and then we've kind of just known each other for a long time and moved in similar sort of circles. Like, I'd occasionally warm up, we'd be DJing on the same bill, and then more recently, early 2000s in Shoreditch, Andrew started going out with one of my housemates, a girl called Lizzie. So we've been close for, well, we were close for 30 years.
Yeah. Okay. Uri, you wanted to ask something.
You're actually here thanks to Nadav Ravid and Noah Argov's passion to A Love From Outer Space. And as a matter of fact, Nadav, who alongside Kwame founded this station, has started the Up to 120 line. It's a party line, like last year, taking much inspiration from A Love From Outer Space. I want to ask about the name. I mean, this is an A.R. Kane song.
Yeah, it was it's a song by A.R. Kane, and it was Andrew and I, both fans of the 4AD label, and we had a list like this of potential names for the club, and in the end it was so different to anything else at the time, again just being difficult. We thought, yeah, A Love From Outer Space.
I think that it's a statement, because A.R. Kane are not of the same kind of electronic minimal techno everything. It's a whole different legacy.
It seemed out of keeping with the, you know, all the clubs around about that, those fabric and all one word, functional, Vorsprung Technik kind of names. And yeah, we wanted something maybe a little bit more romantic. So
and a lot longer.
Yeah, but it obviously got abbreviated to Alphos.
So. Yeah,
Alphos, yeah. What we're listening right now is Roberto Rodriguez. Can you say a word about it before we
Yeah, Mustafa Vajot by Roberto Rodriguez. Pretty much modern Italo disco, romantic kind of thing that you play on a boat party on the Adriatic. I think we were playing it, but it was more latterly much more popularized by DJ Harvey. So there you go, a little bit of background. As for Roberto, I don't know too much. I've got a couple of his other productions, but this is definitely the best thing that he's done to date, in my opinion.
All right.
Great, let's give it a listen.
So keep on.
Thank you.
Walk of Shame, an unreleased remix.
Yeah, that's one All from right. my one from my personal stash of unreleased nice. Material. In fact, the only thing that the only recorded musical collaboration of myself and Andrew, but unfortunately didn't come out due to tedious legal reasons.
Well, that's the only like official.
Yep. That's the only like I was very when we started DJing together. I was very conscious that I'd already started my Hardware Brothers project, and I really, you know, Andrew's such a big personality and a big name. I felt that DJing with him and probably making music with him might kind of not be the best way to go. So I wanted to keep the two things separate. But in this instance, I think I did two remixes of Andrew's projects, and this one was unreleased. So at the original, I don't know if you know it, but it's the song of the Walk of Shame, coming back from the disco at 10 o'clock in the morning with, in a mess. But I thought it'd be quite funny to make it, rather than to make it like a euphoric, rather than being a slink of shame, I thought it'd be funny to make it euphoric and make it into a triumphant march of walking home from the club. So, unfortunately it didn't come out, but I'll share that with you today.
Maybe it will.
No, it won't.
No, okay.
Definitely won't, due to the aforementioned tedious legal reasons.
Okay. Damn it! Save the file.
Okay.
Save the file.
Copy, paste.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, after Andrew's passing, like surprising death last year, what were your thoughts regarding the future of A Love from Outer Space?
Initially, I was somewhat circumspect as to whether or not I should carry it on. But we've got a very, very strong and large, well, I don't say fans, not the right word, but A Love from Outer Space in the UK and, well, all over Europe, it's got a very, very cohesive community. And I got many, many messages when Andrew passed, and the gist of the message was, we're very sorry for your loss, but don't ever think about stopping doing A Love from Outer Space. So I was kind of I was given a mandate by the people.
And okay. We're happy that you did.
Yes, thank you. Totally.
Me too. So.
Maybe what about the Hardway Brothers? What
Who
can you tell
are the brothers?
Yeah, what can you tell us about this project?
So the Hardway Brothers. So, the origin of the name, my former flatmate, a guy called Jake Davis, was a professional recording engineer, worked at Sony's Whitfield Street Studios in London, worked with people like Madonna, and he's a really good engineer. So the brothers were initially myself and Jake Davis, and how we came to get this name was Jake moved to Los Angeles to work for Madonna on her Drowned World Tour, and at the time, I was really heavily into mountaineering and rock climbing, so I went to visit Jake in Los Angeles, and we decided it might be fun to go to Vegas for a little while, because there's in the Red Rocks National Park, beautiful sandstone formations and really incredible rock climbing. So we went and spent the days climbing in the desert and then the nights in the casinos playing craps. And there was one particular place, I think it was the Hilton, the Riviera Hilton in Las Vegas, and there was one particular dealer who was a real character, and he cottoned on to the fact that Jake and I weren't Americans, and he couldn't figure out from the accent where we were from. And he said, "Are you guys from Texas?" It was like, "No, we're from England." But we in craps, there's various different bets, and one of the bets is like a long odds bet, and it's called a hard way. So And every time we approached the table, he'd announce to the whole, this big crowd of people, maybe 20, 30 people around the table, it was like, "Here they are from Texas, the Hardway Brothers." So, I kind of wrote it down in my little notebook and thought, I'll use that one day. And
that can work as a Southern Southern TV show.
Yeah, yeah. But it was, we were christened by a dealer in a casino in Las Vegas. So, given names are good, I think.
Yeah, I think you like it, give names to, making up.
I mean, it was good in that I didn't make it up myself. Somebody else actually gave it to me.
But you adopted it.
Yeah, I adopted it.
Yeah. You actually have a release out, a new release by the...
Yes, I do.
Hardway Brothers?
Well, kind of.
With a collaboration with the other artists.
Okay, so my intention was that for actually to be just a project called The Summer Isle Six. Mm-hmm. And the label, Is It But Eric, kind of said, look, Sean, nobody knows who the Summer Isle Six are. Can we put on the cover Hardway Brothers present a Summer Isle Six? I was like, yeah, guys, if it means...
Actually, I wondered about it.
But yeah, that was kind of something that... So during... In London, we had a really, really extensive lockdown. They didn't let us out of our houses for a very, very long time. I'm kind of going crazy in my house, and the only thing that I could do to stop myself from going completely mental was to make a whole load of music. And I was doing collaborations with a lot of people, and this... As well as making music, I was listening to a lot of music, and... One thing that I came to listen to quite a lot is a band called the Waterboys, who are kind of a Scottish Irish post punk.
Yeah.
Probably most famous for their song "The Hole of the Moon," but they've got three or four absolutely amazing albums, and I found myself listening to this music a lot because it was shortly after Andrew had passed away, and I was feeling like a little bit melancholic, and that kind of music, it just kind of... It kind of felt right for the times for me. And then I kind of got to thinking, I wonder if I can kind of adopt a little bit of a flavour of this and kind of roll it into some sort of more contemporary electronic music. And it ended up... So I roped in Duncan Gray, who played some guitars on it, Andy Bell of, Ride and Oasis, and I kind of gotten to know him because I did a remix for his electronic project, which is called Glock.
Really? So Andy Bell...
From Ride.
Yeah, he has a collaboration with Andy Bell, yes.
I actually didn't know that.
Okay, I didn't bring that with me, but it's out now on Is It But Eric, and it'll shortly be out on a digital label that I have founded called Outremer, and it'll be available on all streaming platforms very soon.
And
all
it will be legal.
It will be legal. There'll be no tedious legal difficulties involved in that, I hope.
No, because actually Uri sent me the post the Instagram post about the new release, and I didn't found it, so I said I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's vinyl only at the moment, but it will be available digitally on the 24th of June on all major platforms.
That's something to expect.
Let's listen to some music.
Yes, Thomas? So I actually took liberty to mix Roman Flueger's Rules inside.
Oh, okay. So this is a relatively recent release from Roman, and I have to say that I am possibly Roman's biggest fan in the whole world.
Okay.
He's such an incredible heritage of music. He's like, for me, he's up there with Andrew. And this is something that he released relatively recently. It's 110 BPM. It's not the kind of thing that you'd maybe normally associate with Roman, but it's fucking...
Yeah, like, actually...
Sorry, I said the F word. It's very, very good. It's absolutely amazing.
No, they'll drop us from here. Okay, so let's... So we're not cursed anymore.
No, we won't. I apologize.
Okay. אתם על הקצה, אנחנו אורי זר אביב, אני תומר קריב. This one, our guest, our lovely guest, Sean Johnston, which will be playing tonight here at the Ozen, ינגן הערב כאן באוזן, למטה, איפה שהיה פעם, הבוטלג, במסיבה שבה ינגנו גם נדב רביד ולוטנט דן, ובחדר השני, קוואמי ונועה ארגוב ואורי זר אביב. ואני פשוט אהיה שם לשמוע.
ולרקוד, תומר, ולרקוד, לא רק לשמוע.
בסדר, זה מיותר, בסדר. So, Sean, this one is Feel Fly, another one of your picks.
Yeah, Mediterranean Dreams, something that I procured from Bandcamp recently, and okay. I kind of like that trancy Balearic feel. Nice summery track.
Yeah, that's
one
nice.
One for the ladies, maybe.
One for the ladies! Sean, you were called by many names. I mean, acid house veteran, techno survivor, freelance disco consultant, you know. But you're also, as you mentioned, or maybe used to be, a professional mountain climber.
No, I wasn't a professional mountain climber. Somebody's exaggerated that a little bit.
The whole thing was exaggerated, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's
let me have it.
There's this thing called
let
PR.
Let me have it. But my question is, no, but you do. You used to climb.
Yeah, I climbed quite a lot.
You actually moved away from DJing and making music.
Yeah, this was kind of round about the late 90s, round about the time of Big Beat, and
You don't like Big Beat.
Wasn't really feeling that. No, it was quite fun to go out for a night out, but musically it was fluff, really, wasn't it? It wasn't for me. And in more serious music circles, there was that whole kind of really hard electro thing going on, so the options were either really banging Detroit electro or Big Beat, and I thought maybe it's time to step away from the clubs and get out on the hills. So I spent a few years climbing things in North Wales and sea cliffs, and then progressed onto North Faces in the Alps. So yeah, it was fun. Scary.
So excuse me for maybe being cheesy about it, but do you see any effect of the hills and the climbing in the mountains on the idea of love from outer space?
Short answer, no.
I think this is an honest answer, and I will take it.
I was grasping for straws, but no, I mean...
No, it's, don't. It's, just
it,
don't.
It was, as an experience, it was definitely formative for me in terms of my character, going up a very big hill and frightening yourself to death, putting yourself in a life-threatening situation just for fun. It's maybe it prepared me for playing slow music to people that want to
hear very fast music. What you said earlier about it was kind of an escape from the big beat and all the genres you didn't like, so I think that parties are kind of escape from the big clubs as well.
Yeah, just me being reactionary, I guess.
See, Uri is the journalist, but I made up with that connection.
Well done. Thank you. Thank you for bailing me out.
באת לעזרת חבר, אח שלו.
Thank you for throwing me a lifeline.
I feel the same here.
Just let the PR know that you have a new connection. About the parties are like mountain climbers.
Yeah.
In your next interview.
Yeah. So, but did you still do it?
No, shoulder injury prevented me from doing that, so that hence my return to the world of nightclubs.
Nightclubs isn't easy as well, physically, I think.
Well, when you get to my age, it isn't, but, it's not the same as climbing the North Face of the Eiger, is it?
Yes, so right now we are hearing...
Well, up next, from Norway, Fjordfunk.
Fjordfunk.
Jan Marius Dahler, one of the first wave of...
Wow, say it again, please.
Jan Marius Dahler. One of the first wave of, you know, Todd Terje, Prince Thomas.
Okay.
He was involved. I got to know him through Mongolian Jet Set, and we've remained friends. But in recent years, he's been working on some amazing music, and this is absolutely brand new, unreleased, and I think it's really cool.
Yes.
All right. Fjord Funk. Yeah, that's a good name as well.
It's great.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Fjord Funk. I wanted to ask you a question about you know, you have a lot of time as a DJ. What kind of differences do you see between DJing back in the days when you started and think end of 80s, beginning of 90s?
This is an interesting question actually, because obviously, so first of all, format, it was vinyl only, and in those back in the early days for me, finding the records was a real issue, because we're talking about pre-Discogs, so I have a notebook like this with lists and lists of things that I was trying to find, or I'd heard of or heard somebody play once and didn't know what it was. So it wasn't as easily accessible. You had to work really hard at it, and when I say you had to work hard at it, you really had to put a lot of time into it, like digging in record shops and going to record shops and swapping records, going to record fairs, and also, you know, no social media. It wasn't a big thing when I first started DJing. I was invited to DJ because people knew that I had a large record collection, and there wasn't any sort of cachet involved in being a DJ. I think the first club that I worked at was a place called the Wellington Club in Hull in the north of England. And in terms of the club's hierarchy, the DJ was below the glass collector and above the guy who swept the floor at the end of the night. And that was kind of the hierarchy.
Glorious.
So, and then, you know, it became during the late 80s and early 90s, the whole acid house explosion, it became more of a thing. But you know, what I did like about it at the very beginning was there wasn't this kind of micro genre specialization. You could go to a rave and you'd hear everything from De La Soul to Detroit techno to Chicago house, Italo disco, and I always liked that kind of variation of music in a night. And you know, there's obviously a place for specialists and people who play a genre, you know, people like, you know, Jeff Mills, who plays his own records, or Todd Terry, who plays his own records. But I, you know, we were talking about this as we were walking to the station. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of choice. It's become democratized. When I started, you had to make a real effort, and now pretty much anybody who's got you know, a USB stick can give it a go. So, and in some respects that's a great thing, but in other respects it's an absolutely terrible thing. So it's you know, it's.
Do you witness any difference from audience perspective?
Is the audience today different? An interesting question. In that, certainly, I've noticed post lockdown is interesting, because there's a whole generation of kids that have started going to club nights, who, you know, were maybe 16 at the beginning of the pandemic and became of age during the course of the pandemic, and they've got no idea how to conduct themselves in a nightclub, which is pretty funny. I played at Zukunft in Zurich, and I played there a few times, and it's like an uber cool club. And then the last time I played there, it was like a school disco. There was like guys hanging over the front of the booth, kissing their girlfriends, spilling beer everywhere. It was like, whoa, this place has changed. And Chio, the guys, the booker there, said, "Yeah, it's these kids. They've never been out before. They don't know how to behave in a club." So,
That's interesting what you say, that the pandemic effect on the audience, because I many people talk about the effect that people just want to go out and
out and shopping, like the Hartnell and Young track.
Yeah,
but go and shopping.
Conversely, I think there's a bunch of people that equally decided that they quite liked staying at home and stopped going out as well. So it's it's been. And
maybe people are more picky at the choice whether to go out or stay at home.
And also, I think in terms of other DJs and younger DJs, I've certainly noticed that the art of warming up a nightclub seems to be becoming more and more of a lost art. I played at events recently with younger DJs who, you know, have been first on the bill, and I arrived there at maybe 1:30 a.m. to do my set, and they've already at 127 BPM. And you think, hang on, guys, you need to think this through a little bit more. But, I guess that's like that they've got social media, Instagram to think of.
I think that Israelis are a bit was always the audience, the Israeli audience was like that for many years. So they want all they want is highlights. You know, trance is the most popular music genre in Israel parties. So you know, 140 all night long.
I don't want to sound like that sort of old boomer guy or Statler and Waldorf in the Muppets kind of grumbling in the air. But I think maybe there should be some sort of like international DJ competency test before people are allowed to let loose on a nightclub or a festival.
I think we can agree. I think that what Nadav's trying to do, you know, and that's why he brought you. So he's trying to create, in my opinion, he's trying to create a new way of partying in Israel.
Yeah,
he's talking about the up to 122 BPM.
Yeah, Nadav's line.
It's going on for about a year now, and I think the response from the audience, also young audience, is great.
People see this short, I call it attention deficit DJing, and like if people are showed that there's another way and they understand that it's maybe more fun and that it's, you know, if you wait for a little bit, it's much better at the end. If you wait, it's that deferred gratification thing, and you know, you have to teach children and animals that. I think the same applies for clubbers.
Right, well, it's important to mention it's not only Nadav's.
No, Nadav's. Nadav and Nadav's, Lieutenant Dan. I'm sorry, excuse me. Yeah, Nadav and Lieutenant Dan, Daniel. Andrew Weatherall remix of Phil Kieran.
In the background.
In the background, yeah.
In the background. It's one of Andrew's lesser known remixes. I think it actually came out on Hot Creations, which is probably not a label that you'd associate with either Phil Kieran or Andrew. But,
okay.
It's just a really, really beautiful piece of music. So, yeah.
So we'll play it a bit and go on.
Is it okay? Is it okay?
Okay, first of all, we're very proud that you brought a local track. I don't know if whether it's local track, local artist, Israeli artist, Otarki and Hektik.
Maor Anava.
Maor Anava and Nadav Spiegel.
Yes.
Yes. You want to tell us a bit about it?
So, Nadav, I know because he is on the same booking agency as me, out and met him at the Convenenza Festival, the one that we held at the Teatro de la Mer in Set. Saw his live set there and hung out with him a bit, and he's a really cool guy, and I've been following his production work, and this is something that I was sent very, very recently, and I've been playing an awful lot at my recent club nights, and it's one that I always reach for the peak time, and it always makes people dance like crazy.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's
Convenenza Festival, created by Andrew Weatherall.
That's correct, yeah, and Bernie Fabra, who's my partner in crime in the South France.
They're not the only Israelis you collaborate with. On our way here, you told me that you actually did a back-to-back with Moscoman.
Yes, oh. I met Chen in Berlin, actually, when he was living in Berlin. We did A Love From Outer Space at what was the place called? It was Wilden Renata's outdoor place by the river. I can't remember the name of the venue, but
it's
anyway.
It's all right.
But Chen played before me and Andrew, and we really liked what he was doing. He was playing quite a lot of new wavy kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And once again, going back to that variety of different things. And
I think that Moscoman is a good example for the Israeli Tel Aviv sound that was trendy lately.
Living in London for a while quite recently, and we did a back-to-back gig together in a place in Hastings, and his label, Disco Halal, I'm a big fan of.
Yeah. They have also this blend of, you know, Eastern stuff and new wave stuff and techno and actually that's kind of my taste on you know, clubbing, club music. Uri, did you want to ask something that I told you not to ask, but now I want you to do it.
What was it?
Question 9.
Question 9, which is much better than 8.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. That's one after 8.
Yeah, that would be maybe a hard one to answer, or maybe annoying, but endure me. So, you know, beside your left field approach to DJing, how would you describe your current style of sets? Because, I mean, you're not only space disco, definitely not pure dub sets, and not everything you play is Balearic.
No, I could pontificate and try to say something really profound, but in all honesty, I just play the music that I like, and it's my taste is informed by. I've been buying records. I'm 55 years old, and I've been buying records religiously since I was 15. And I kind of grew up in the 80s with all of the, you know, the classic electro pop, Human League, Duran Duran, all of that kind of stuff. And I saw the beginning of house music, and I've witnessed so much music in the course of my life, and so many of those different kind of styles and genres have influenced me. And trying to incorporate all of those, it's kind of a journey, and what I like to try to do is to incorporate some of all of those different flavors that I've experienced during the course of my life into a set, if it's just in a micromanaged kind of way, if that makes any sense. But the short answer to that is I just play the music that I like and that excites me, and that I hope will have a similar effect on other people. I just like to share music, and it's nice to see people getting off on things that I've discovered and found to be exciting. Mm-hmm. So it just comes from a place of love for music, really.
Sean, we have 5 minutes, so okay. Last track, your pick.
Do we play some of Autarkic and Hektik? Okay, so I'm going to indulge myself a little bit. There's a track there called Elevator Ride.
All right, yeah.
So this is
just a new, word about it.
This is a new project, and this is another one that I did in the lockdown. So my partner in crime on this particular release is Andrew Meacham, who has got an incredible heritage. first came to public notoriety as Bizarre Inc., and then over the years was Chicken Lips, and is now the Emperor Machine, amongst many, many other projects. And the guy's an absolute out-and-out electronic music hero of mine, and when he suggested that he'd be up for doing a collaboration, I was really, really excited. So I sketched out a demo of this on my laptop in my kitchen and sent it to Meacham, and Meacham's got the most incredible studio. The guy owns pretty much every classic synthesizer known to humanity, and he took the bare bones that I sketched out and fleshed it out with these incredible machines, and it's kind of a cosmic techno disco, I don't know what you'd call it, but I was pleased with the results. And
we cannot put genre on it, that's the beauty. Okay.
Anyway, here it comes. This is the project's called Unknown Genre, and the track's called Elevator Ride, and it will be coming out on a label called Other Goodness.
All right, yes. So just some credits before we leave. תודה לקצבת, לעומר סנש, בן אשלי, השפיגל, האוזן השלישי, צוות האתר. תודה לקוואמי, תודה לצוות מסיבות עד 120, לוטן עדן ונדב רביד, ושהביאו בעצם, ולנו ארגוב, שהביאו את שון לארץ. תודה, אוריזר אביב.
תודה לך, תומר קריב.
Thank you so much, Sean,
for
being
here. Thank you for
having me. It was very, very fun.
Great to be here, and yeah.
Yeah, we'll see you tonight,
though. Yes, indeed.
Right. Thanks so much for coming. Thank it was you. Super amazing and interesting. Thank you again.
Yeah. Bye-bye.